around the table and introduce yourself, just name and where you're representing, that would be really helpful. So I am Katie Wilson. I'm with Consor, and we are part of the consulting group helping to support this process.
I'm Clark Worth. I work with Katie.
Bill Klein. I am the president of the Northeast Hazeldale Neighborhood Association.
Hi, everyone. I'm Christine Perry with WCU Extension.
Teresa Meyer, Parks Advisory Board.
The guy with the new face. I'm Matthew Ball, or Matt Ball. I'm with Clark County Parks and Lands. I'm one of the operations directors. I'm new to the farm.
You've taken Eric's.
Oh, yeah. I took the same. This is Eric's old chair.
So our Oppenheimer, our house is I was standing his job to have a great business association.
I'm Rochelle Manero from News. I'm volunteer from the
Good afternoon, Mark Reith, Vancouver Public Schools.
Hi, Sandy Brown, and I'm representing the Heritage Farm Advisory Team.
And I'm Rocky Houston. I'm with the Parks and Lands Division here with Clark County.
Amy Arnold, the Office Assistant with the Parks and Lands Division.
I'm Lindy Wallach. I'm a park planner responsible for the development of the Heritage Farm Sustainability Plan. And David is lurking.
And then way in the back.
Zay and I work at the park.
Great. Well, welcome, everybody. We want to take a quick moment to go through the agenda. So today we're going to do a brief recap of the December 14th open house. Then we will share the final results of the community survey and also the community leader interviews. We'll talk today about financial sustainability at the farm, and then start talking about the criteria for shaping the sustainability plan and have a discussion around that. And then we will talk about next steps before adjourning and going on with the rest of our day. You have a packet in front of you, just to kind of orient you with what you have. You have a summary of this community survey results. You have a highlights from the community leaders interviews, and then what was that?
The revenue and expenses.
And then you have the financial expenses and revenues information about the farm, and that was requested, I think, at the first meeting.
And this was this is just what was emailed to you, so it's just a printout of that. And then you also have an updated copy of the current uses map. Still not completely perfect, but I thought it might be a benefit for you to have it while you're thinking about this. What do these housekeeping slide?
Yeah, we should do that. For those of us joining remotely, we just want to remind you that this meeting is being recorded, and you can use the chat. Committee members can use the chat or raise hand tools to go ahead and participate. So if you have questions or comments, please use the chat or raise your hand. And if you are a guest observing the meeting today, please use the chat to post your questions or comments.
So Katie, there was a thing that came up saying, should we be able to hear you? So Kirk, can you hear us? Jack? Jaslyn, can you hear us?
Getting a thumbs up.
EJ?
Might help for everybody to raise their voice a little bit, and then just a big empty space here. So
it's like we've got, she's muted. Do we mute people?
Yes.
Okay, so we may not be able to hear you. All right.
Okay.
Just making sure that we could all be heard.
I think Jaslyn is able to speak.
She is. She has to unmute herself.
All right. Perfect.
Oh, we got a thumbs up. Great.
Woo-hoo.
Sorry.
Welcome, everybody online. So again, please find the raise your hand feature. It's at the lower portion of your screen, and also the chat. That will be the way that you can participate if you're a guest, is in chat. Thank you very much. Okay, so moving, we went through the agenda. So we wanted to take just some time to recap the open house. And really, this is, we want to hear from you, what your thoughts were on the open house. So if you remember right, we hosted it here. It was December 14th. We gave a presentation about the master plan and the process. And then all of you did such a great job mingling with folks here. We had farm participants displaying their boards and information about their programs and activities. So please share what you thought about that evening.
For those of you who weren't here, but I think most of you were here, but for those of you who weren't, we had 66 people attend by hand count. So it's great attendance. The displays were terrific, I thought, by the organizations, you know, and all staffed, you know, they staffed their own display. So that was good. And we had participation from both people who had been long time involved in the farm, and also some people, I would say people off the street, but people who got interested in the publicity and did not have a lot of experience with the farm. So it was a good mix.
It was a good mix. We also had about 10 people online.
That's
so
great.
Yeah. So good turnout. We have pretty positive feedback. I think everyone that's reached out to me has spoken pretty positively.
One of the things I think was helpful and kind of alluded to it was a little gal that came talking about ADA compliance on the farm. So even if we had a small section of the farm that was available, for a section close to 17th and parking, that would really be an enhancement. And with all of the assisted living facilities around here, they could do tours, you know, here you are, pay your parking fee and come in and look around. I think it'd be helpful.
And the ADA thing was brought home because we had people who had ADA issues. The elevator had the lights out, and so the accessibility for the meeting was a little bit of an issue too.
So help with the test.
Else?
I wish there had been a little bit more flex in the schedule. I think that there's still a lot of people that seem like had things that they wanted to say. And given that it's such a big topic for the community and it's a pretty
agree with Zora, and that if there's other opportunities through the process, not limited opportunities, but even just one opportunity where the people could just come and speak and maybe have a couple of open-ended questions, but to make them feel like they have a full opportunity to participate in, especially through the surveys where we got a number of people who haven't had a relationship with the farm before, to give them an opportunity to really fully question what goes on there and learn about it, as well as have some input. So I would agree that a little more time for that kind of conversation from the public.
We've discussed at the next meeting that we will give more time to the Q&A discussion. We did go a little bit past what we had planned on for that meeting, but we were concerned about taking away from the farm user groups that were here and not people not having as much time to interact with them as well. So, but we do want to address that in the future. So something we would pick up on as well.
I think what I noticed is that, and I've seen this quite a bit, is there's still this lack of understanding of what's happening in the process. And I think that there's a lot of misconceptions around what is and what isn't. And I don't know if that'll go away unless there's some kind of more open discussion. And whether or not it is coupled with, you know, whether there's like, I'm making this up, like a list of what it is and what it's not. I don't know. Or like what we're not going to do, right? I mean, some of it was very clear, but if you're not in that frame of mind, you're not going to hear that. So somehow there's still a lot of public mistrust around these processes for whatever reason, and to think about how to dispel, you know, dispel what is and what isn't true. And I think continuing to show up and be transparent, I mean, it's just like, kind of just keep following those steps.
I think it was pretty clear that there was distrust. And I think that would be people in the front. Maybe felt a little bit attacked by that because you didn't do anything individually. I mean, I'm making assumptions, but it's there, and I mean, you could see, all feel how powerful that mistrust was. And you guys have to go way above and beyond what you think you have to. I mean, you don't have to, you can do whatever you want, but my suggestion would be to go above and beyond what you think you have to gain back that trust. And that can mean a variety of things, but from my perspective, it means complete transparency and really being open to any feedback that is there. And I think, yeah, I'll end it there. Yeah.
Just to add on to what Zora said, I think that the county and maybe Washington State University are misunderstanding how much and how long the mistrust has gone on. It has been on for decades. And so us coming in December, and I'm looking at December 2022. How long ago did we do this? I mean, it just seems like it's a whole other year. And I think that that's something that we need to acknowledge, and I don't know how to do that. I chatted with a couple of the people who were so unhappy at the open house, and even saying this, we're looking at this as a new beginning, and we want to do what we can to make sure that other people's interests, and we can use these almost 80 acres in lots of creative ways, and we can address a lot of things. The county is really stepping up and giving us all sorts of resources to work with. And they just looked at me like, so you bought into it too, huh? Okay. Yes, I think that it's a big thing. And I don't know how, I'm not sure how we can get by it. Maybe at some point, midway through this process, we can have another open house for the people. I think it would be really helpful to have Master Gardener people do a tour for us, and then maybe we could talk to somebody or part of them to see if we couldn't get at least one well-publicized open tour to let people go through what's available to go through. I mean, there's a ton of this land that's not being used for anything. I mean, I noticed one of the questionnaire responses was, why not use it for farm production? And that's, you know, it's just something we're not doing. We could set up incubator farms. That's always a thing. Anyway.
What did you think?
Most of what I noticed was the lack of trust. I tried to figure out where the, what part of the organization or what part of the process did they not trust? I know that there was some historical references to things that chemicals that have been put on the property. I noticed that there's a real divide between the people that are strictly farmers that don't want to see it turned into a park or even referenced as a park. One of the things that I am passionate about with that property was only mentioned once in the historical value of it. That only came up towards the end of the session. And I wish we'd had more time to explore that area of it too. So that's really what I noticed about it. So.
Thank you.
Chair?
Really helpful feedback as we continue to plan the engagement process. So hearing what your thoughts were, what the takeaways were, where we can do better, what we should do again is really helpful feedback. So thank you for taking the time to share. If there's nothing else, we'll move on to the community survey results. And
you want to stand up?
Is it okay if I stand up?
Yeah.
She does have to sit down. So. We had really amazing participation in the community survey, and with 1,130 participants, and that is a testament to a lot of the work that Lindy put into and Amy put into sharing the survey link with all different user groups at the county and different community groups throughout the community. And making sure that it was on the county website. So we got a really good mix of folks who are both familiar with the farm and not so familiar with the farm. So we can see that we had 65% of folks are frequent users. We did initially share it with the organizations that are already on the mailing list for the farm. So it's not surprising that people that are passionate about the farm and very familiar with what they're doing there took the time to fill out the survey, and their feedback was really helpful. We were also really impressed that we got 35% of the participants had never visited the farm, but they were still interested, and that was really interesting. Next slide. So some of the highlights that came out, some top priorities for the master plan improvements included the outdoor classroom shelter, new greenhouses, interpretive trails, and then, like we talked about today, the public access and parking issues. Suggestions for new activities and programs included the farmers market. 73% of folks noted the farmers market. More educational opportunities, public events, 56%, and farm to table business, some sort of farm to table business. And that looked different to a lot of different folks. There was a broad support for finding new funding sources and lots of ideas as to what that could look like. 72% supported it continuing to be part of the county general fund. 76% noted private contributions would be helpful. 61% supported increasing or establishing rent fees, or farm, and then 50% farm user fees. Next slide. So we wanted to take a moment. There was a lot of folks who took the time to provide comments, additional comments, and there was some significant themes to what we heard. The first being that folks really wanted to honor and celebrate the agricultural roots of the farm. Even folks that had never been there saw the value of maintaining the historical nature of the farm. It needs to be preserved for the future. Please don't develop it beyond anything related to agriculture. It's important to preserve this valuable space and help community members learn how to grow their food and grow food for themselves and commercially. Next slide. The second theme was that we needed more publicity about farm activities, and that would increase public use. So folks talked a lot about how they weren't super familiar with what the farm was. Maybe they've driven by, but they didn't know exactly what was there. So, and they don't see a lot of advertisements. So they talked about, you know, I don't think people are really aware of the site and what it offers. Advertising would be great. We only know about this because I live in Hazel Dell and drive by it. So this site is for farmers and gardeners. More communications and advertising for this site would be helpful to reach the greater community, folks that might access it for a different reason, or maybe would be interested in gardening but didn't know that opportunity existed. Next slide. New facilities and activities should be considered for the Heritage Farm site, but without displacing the current uses. Folks talked about wanting to make sure that there were, that they would like to see things like a year-round farmers market or that supports incubator business or on-site and partnered with other farms to preserve the farmland in the county. They wanted accessible trails. It's worth finding out a good purpose for the farmland, for farmland to continue to exist, but don't be afraid to try many different things on a small scale before you find one that fits. So people are okay with this not being perfect right away, which is always reassuring when you're trying to lead a process. Farm-to-table dinners, festivals, other community events. People had lots of ideas about things that were sort of connected to agriculture, but maybe broadened the spectrum of participants to the broader community. New funding sources can be considered to support Heritage Farm, recognizing that this is a public space that will always require some public funding. So I think folks recognize that there's a need to help take some of the strain off the general fund, but they were okay with this being a public space and having some level of support. If it's mixed use, cost average should also be mixed, folks said. I think that if you charge a farmers market vendors a small fee, it would draw a lot of attention and could be a centerpiece to the Hazeldale area. Do whatever it takes to stay there forever. Thank you for being there for our community. We need our farms. So that just speaks to how much people really value this space. So I wanted to take just a quick moment if anyone has any comments or thoughts or questions before we move on. Go ahead.
Were there any responses to this that indicated they would like to see it commercially? I mean, it built over, change the use to something else.
We did not have anyone respond.
There may have been two, if you think of 1,100 surveys, there may have been two surveys out of 1,100 some that suggested some kind of private development. But we had, I would say, hundreds that said no private development. We might have had two.
But so the overriding thought is that they want to maintain it.
Yes.
We just got to figure out how. Okay.
On some level, pretty much all of the participants acknowledged that it was a farm and wanted the uses to somehow support that. They had ideas on that may have expanded beyond what's in the master plan, but they had their ideas were linked to wanting to preserve it on some level and see the farm use celebrated. So, yeah.
I just think it's reaffirming that that you redid the did the survey, which is kind of similar to what was done with the previous master plan, and three or four other times surveys like this have been done, and they all have the same central theme. They all have the same kinds of comments. So it's reaffirming that that's really what the community or those that are seeing the farm are consistent over the last, say, 10 years of surveys that have been done in the communities.
You know, the survey is such a great tool because it's a way to touch lots of different people, and so in a way that we can't otherwise do in an engagement process. So it's always nice to have that as a starting point and then narrow the focus with the steering committee and stakeholder interviews as an additional tool to kind of start digging into what some of the themes from the survey are.
A lot of times over time, things change and trends change, but the trend for what people want this to be hasn't changed. So
that's great. We can jump into community leaders interview highlights. So this was a fun process. We met with 11 community leaders. It was a great cross-section of site neighbors, farm users, community partners, staff, everyone, you know, who touches the farm in different ways. You know, we've just touched on it a little bit, but some of the benefits to doing community leaders interviews is we get to listen to different perspectives from folks that are familiar with the site and learn about project opportunities and constraints from all those different perspectives. So all these different community leaders have to bring different lived experience, different work experience at the farm. And so when we asked the same questions, it was very interesting to hear some of the themes, but the different perspectives on those ideas. And then for us to continue to build a project culture of collaboration. You know, that I think that has been a goal that's been articulated multiple times from the county, that they want this to be a collaborative effort. They want this, they want to include the community. They want to hear from farm users and really make this site something that reflects the community values. And so this is one more step to help ensure that we do that at the end. Next slide. So some of the highlights that we heard was that everyone we interviewed cherishes the farm on some level. They worry about the future. So they want to honor the history of the poor farm. We talked about history. There was a lot of mention of that in the community leaders interviews, that they value the history of the site and want to make sure that that's preserved. This is an important piece of real estate. Proceed with care and caution and be sure that the plan brings value to the community. I thought that was a really thoughtful comment because it didn't reflect maybe specifically what that person wanted individually, but that they valued making sure that it was what the community needed. Even those observers who frequent the site aren't familiar with all of the current activities and uses. And this spoke to what we heard in the survey also, which was that not even folks that are there maybe regularly aren't aware of everything else that's happening at the farm. So one person said, I work with the SNAP Ed team and the food bank, but I'm not familiar with much else. It's a large site with some educational and research opportunities, but this person didn't have a lot of detail about what that might mean. Next slide. So this group's preferred future for the Heritage Farm is to continue to expand on today's assorted activities. So folks were not necessarily looking to drastically change what's happening at the farm, but just to improve on it. And so, one person said, I talk less about what it is now and more about what it could be. The farm is an underrealized opportunity. I want to use my voice and role to amplify everything that LULAC is working on as it directly connects to supporting public health. And so that person saw the connection between the farm and a greater need out in the community. The other thing was that participants generally concur with the County Council's goals for the site to implement the master plan, increase public access, and improve financial sustainability. Most folks didn't have a lot of heartburn over those goals. They were interested in those goals being successful. They just had different ideas as to what that looked like. The overarching question raised for the Heritage Farm's future, is it a farm or is it a park? And we've heard this over and over again. The county's confused about Heritage Farm's role. Is it a farm or is it a park? One person said, keep it a farm. It's not a park. So I think that's one of those things that it still needs clarity. And what is a farm? What is a park? Can they coexist? That's something that even stakeholders who are directly connected with the farm are still grappling with.
Maybe the answer is, it is whatever it's going to take to keep it as it is and not get developed. If it takes it being an agro park, then that would have some merits. There's a big element, I think, of making it something that the public not only respects, but is willing to spend some money on, and protecting the research, the gardeners, the various plots that are being developed on the farm, and having access to it. When I first saw the question about access from Hazelville Park, I thought, now there's a reason we didn't want that in the beginning, and it is exactly that. When people come through the main gate, you can control who comes through, you have a general idea of how many people are going to be on there, those things down in line, you know that. But if they're coming across, I'm sorry to interrupt. It's in Northeast Hazelville, that's why I tease them about it. But if they come through only from the park side, then you don't have that. And it just might open the door. It might make it less attractive for public access from the people that are already using the park and have time, money, and effort invested in it. I'm just trying to cover it and make everybody want to keep it. It's just something to think about.
Well, I think we could explore that issue.
Can you hold on a second? We've had a request online if you could state your names before you speak, because I can't quite tell who's talking, I think, online.
Okay, Bill Klein. Okay, now I'm trying to remember.
Sorry.
I think the issue with Hazeldale Park, that when we discuss it further, and I hope we will discuss it further, is that I think people go to that park for a different reason other than to come up and see Heritage Farm. So I think there's the difference in use that would kind of preclude us from making access and the problems that entails. And they come to the Heritage Farm for a more specific reason other than to go out and have a picnic or let their kids run in the field and play frisbee. So
another highlight, what's missing from Heritage Farm today, observers say there's a need and room for more programs and facilities that serve children and youth. This was a theme that almost everyone mentioned on some level, was wanting to connect young people with the farm in some capacity, whether it be a youth center for innovative urban farming. One person noted that there's a desperate need in the broader community for more preschool opportunities. Could this be a site that could help support that? More learning opportunities for students who otherwise wouldn't have access to outdoor learning. So, you know, talking, they, a lot of people touched it in a different way, whether it was, you know, early learning or older youth students. At-risk youth was even mentioned. So, you know, trying to find a way to connect young people so that you continue to have generations of folks who value the farm and continue to lean into agriculture. Next slide. New farm and food-related uses also seem to be a natural fit. So there were a few different ways that this came up. People want to farm but can't afford to buy land in our community. Incubator farms would be a great way to help. LULAC could potentially operate most of the farm as an actual working farm so people could see how a real farm works. And then something a little bit different was host events like outdoor movies or dinners on the farm. So I think people saw different ways to continue food-related activities and education while still honoring what the farm was intended to be. To achieve financial sustainability, alternative funding sources are thought to be acceptable. Leases, user fees, grants, partnerships, and private contributions were all mentioned as potential funding sources. So a couple of highlights were allow the farm to actually start farming and there'll be lots of opportunity for cost recovery. One of our community leaders said the Cowlitz Tribe's gardening department is looking to expand and might be interested in farming portion of the Heritage Farm site, which is something new that we hadn't heard in other groups. So that was interesting also. Next slide. The Heritage Farm site is still identified primarily with the WSU Extension. We've heard this a lot, whether it be, it's my understanding that it was a poor farm, it's not owned by the county. I know that the WSU Extension has operations there as well as the Master Gardeners, and there's community gardens and greenhouses. So this person knew a few of the things going on, but was really familiar with the fact that the WSU Extension is there. It's a shared use site, WSU Extension and many groups. The Heritage Farm may be able to draw lessons learned from peer facilities. Our community leaders have lots of ideas of other sites that could, in certain different capacities, serve to help give examples for what could possibly happen at Heritage Farm. And some of those examples were Lusher Farm in Lake Oswego in Oregon, Sanger Farm, Kelsey Creek Farm, and then the WSU Research Farm in Mount Vernon.
So, and there were lots more that were also mentioned. So, you know, there are examples that maybe aren't going to, we're not going to mirror exactly here, but there are examples out there of things that are currently working that could potentially work at Heritage Farm as well. That's the last highlight. So we do have a little bit more time. Does anyone have any questions about the community leaders interviews? Your packet also includes the question, all the questions we asked, and a list of who the community leaders that we interviewed were.
You could clarify online that the folks that are the community leaders that were interviewed are not the folks that are here today.
Yes.
And that they were, there's a list of people, like, it was a WSU extension director, Michael Gaffney, Lulac.
Yeah, Evergreen Public Schools, the Cowlitz Tribe, Clark County Public Health, Friends of Heritage Farm, and the Clark Cowlitz Farm Bureau were all represented in the interview.
They're listed on your written summary. So.
Yeah. Thoughts?
I have a question.
Sure.
For the community items on the agenda, the financial sustainability and the criteria for shaping the sustainability plan, can we give like a 1 to 2 sentence like description of those two, and then I know you have an additional comment. I just want to make sure that we're saying the right thing in the right spot.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure that this is.
So we will have our the financial sustainability portion will be an overview of the all the financials that were provided in the packet to go over the revenues and expenditures for the farm, how the extension fits into that. And then the priorities or criteria for shaping a sustainability plan, and Lindy will start talking about how we're going to pull all this information together and what we need to know in order to move forward with executing the sustainability plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Have your follow-up question? Okay. You're gonna save it? Okay. Anyone else? Very efficient. Great. Well, if something comes up and you have questions, please feel free to email Lindy or I. We're happy to answer your questions. So I think next it's you, Rocky.
For the audience, Rocky Houston. In front of you is a blurb, a spreadsheet, whatever they call it, a diagram that should be consistent with our last steering committee where we have sort of a high level summary. What I wanted to make sure that we iterated is that our accounting system here has anything that's on the farm or related to the farm in one cost center. And so we have several departments as you look in your document there. There's all different colors to kind of resemble the color money. So we have health department, facilities, parks, et cetera, that all get charged into this one element. And for transparency, what we tried to do was pull those apart in two big chunks, which is there's stuff that's in a separate contract and process, stuff we're not talking about here in this planning effort that's related to WSU's use and services to the community on site. And really what we're trying to do is then be able to focus on those funds or those program elements that this is, which is the operation and sort of that county farm expense. So over the last 5 years, we've averaged about $170,000 in costs for operating the farm. And you might look at that other number and say, hey, that's bigger than the other number, but it does so much more. And so we've got a slide here for Christine to kind of just kind of go over kind of those leveraging opportunities that we're already feeling for at the site and in the community. Next slide.
Just as what Rocky said, so sorry, this is Christine Perry from WCU Extension. And this slide helps to demonstrate that so the county and WSU have been in a cooperative for a number of years now, 100 years to say. And part of our workings and our partnership is that we pull our monies together, right? So the county provides a certain amount of funding, and WSU Extension provide a certain amount of funding. And this just helps you to give a background so that the operation cost that the county provides for us is then leveraged. WSU then takes that money, and that's how we're able to provide our services, right? So there's an operation cost of $310,000 that the county brings forward. And as you see on this chart, in 2022, we brought in $1.5 million to be able to leverage that cost. So and that cost is through endowments, grants, contracts, through WSU, right, donations. So we leverage, so we're able to leverage that amount to provide all the different services that we offer. So that just gives you a little bit of a snapshot. And so every year, on average, that's about how much we bring in that leverages that amount.
Zoom in.
I think I can zoom in. I can read to you what it says. Okay. I'm sorry. You'll get a copy of this. I wanted to print them out before, but it wasn't.
So, you know, and I think as the survey and a lot of those contacts were identifying is that a lot of our people coming, the public access right now are for programs associated with WSU. And you saw that theme over and over again. But sort of flipping back into, okay, now why we're here today is to kind of look at those controllable costs that we're trying to come up with. Can we do anything about? And that's looking at sort of our revenues. And so we have expenses. We always talk about expenses because that's kind of how the government side goes with general fund. But you can see for our revenues associated with farm operation, we have community garden fees. You'll note that program was transitioned over to WSU to kind of manage. And so now the revenues that were there, they're helping pay for an employee to provide a better level of service for that. So that's why that fades away in the last 2 years of this. Space rents are identified two different ways. We had a different accounting system, and I don't know if that's part of the difference, but anyways, it flipped on two different sort of lines, and so we kind of showed that in regards to those two elements there. We had a capital project. The big one there was the irrigation system. I think there was a couple smaller ones that we didn't do the forensic accounting going back to 2015 and opening up everything. But again, just to kind of that rough levels to show that, you know, we've got about $290,000 in that 5 years to help extend the life and improve farm operations out there. And then the remaining difference is general funds. I'll say in 16 and 17, it looks a little low, and couldn't understand if it was part of those operational dollars are being charged to another facility or something. And again, with our limited hours, we want to just look at the gestalt level of the funding. And typically it's about $130,000, $140,000 a year of general fund to offset primarily Zane back there. About 60% of Zane of the costs are related to our staffing and then our water bill, electric bill, those sort of things. And so over that 5 years, it's about $1 million, about $170,000 a year. Next slide. Which I think I'm turning it back over to you, Katie.
Clark,
I'm sorry. I look to the facilitators.
We wanted to get to the opportunity to talk about financial sustainability. We've been waiting for this meeting to do it in some depth. And part of the reason for that is there's been so much excitement in the public about this site that we want to make sure it can keep going. If you heard, the county's concern at the start of this process about having to find $170,000 in cash every year, and in future budget cycles, maybe that would be a problem. You know, the county staff is put in a position of having parks that attract tens of thousands of people a year. And a heritage farm that it does accommodate hundreds a year, but it's not the same as a major public point. So they're feeling there might be some budget pressure in the future in tight budget years, which are probably ahead. The consensus that we heard from, remember, 1,100 surveys back, a lot of community leaders that we talked to, the consensus is find a way to make sure this thing can continue. You know, it's, we're hoping that that comes out of this sustainability plan. It's really the financial sustainability that is the crunch. So a couple of things that you saw on the slides preceding. One of the questions that had come up earlier, how does the money get spent on the site? And the slides that you saw earlier said it mostly goes to staff, you know, staff that are doing things on the site. That's where most of the money goes. What about the revenues? Where are the revenues coming from so far? Well, that's the issue. They're mostly coming from the county general fund. And on the expenses or the revenue slide, you saw that earlier. So most of the money currently is going to staff. Most of the revenues are coming from the county general fund. And the delta there, the difference is about $170,000 a year looking backwards. So in the future, you'd expect that to increase a bit. So I think in here you'll actually see $170,000, $190,000. But remember, Zora, the first time we talked about the amount, first time Rocky mentioned it, he said, well, that's not impossible. You know, there, it seems like there ought to be some ways to do that. So how? What are the ways to do that? We wanted to talk through the possibilities here, the strategies, and then actually put you to work with the strategies. There are categories. We've got the strategies and categories, starting with cost recovery. And these are on the also on the worksheet. They're all listed on the worksheet that Katie passed around. But among the cost recovery strategies, leasing the unprogrammed parts of the site as an option. Another option is having the tenants' leases based on the cost for operating that. So what is the county outlay? What are the county outlays that relate to that? And then developing a fee schedule and having fees that you are charged for different services on the site. The another category here, take the next slide. Oh, I'm sorry, the cost recovery, oh, no, that's fine, I'll do cost recovery. The cost recovery, here's some realities about cost recovery. The cost recovery was the main theme of the WSU study that was done a couple of years ago. And I said, what we need is a cost recovery plan. But some of the realities about cost recovery right now, cost recovery on the site and looking back over the years has only been about 1%. So it's just a fraction. It does show up on the revenue sources, but it's really a very small contributor up to this point. Another idea that leasing the farmland, right? Like we could lease, take part of the site, is it being used? We could lease it as farmland. Well, the going rate for leased farmland in Clark County is $200 an acre. So we could lease all 80 acres that we have there, feed, you know, could happen, and you would only raise $16,000. So it really isn't a major offset to the cost. We also looked at cost recovery, reality of cost recovery for those peer facilities. And mentioned in the WSU study, mentioned by a number of the people in the survey, mentioned by stakeholders we talked to, we know there are some peer facilities around the country and around the Northwest, but when you look at those, cost recovery does not amount to a big part of any of their budgets. Okay, so several of them, not all of them, many of them are trying some cost recovery, and they're recovering some costs. But almost in almost every instance, that they have a major source of funds. And the two that are typical, it's part of a higher educational institution, and they have classes, it's part of the learning. So think of Oregon State University would be an example. Typically, they're the land-grant colleges, they got farm and school, and they got farm, you know, so that's how they're operating, as part of the higher ed institution. The other main way is they're a park. You know, so they're a park, they get paid for it just like other parks. And I'd say, you know, maybe 50-50. There are very few. There are a couple examples of where the whole property has been turned over to a nonprofit. You know, do with it what you want. We're trying to have farm-related stuff. There are a couple examples like that, but it is not that common. And in those cases, it's pretty clear that the deep pocket is still the government that owns the site, you know, if it is. So, again, lesson learned from that is that we don't see out there a great way to pay for all of that stuff, even just $170,000 a year. We don't, aren't seeing a way to pay for that just using cost recovery. So what are some of the other ways here to do it? The second category is contributions. And in the first discussions that we had with you, contributions came up as a possible source. You know, couldn't we have a fundraiser for this? Couldn't we have the foundation raise money for capital projects or maybe for operating too? Is there some way that contributions could do it? Another source, or there are alternate funding sources that the county actually has been exploring. If we had a portion of this that was declared as a regional park, could we use another funding source? We wouldn't have to use the county general funds. We use another funding source that were there. David describes that as changing the color of the money that we use to pay for this. So it wouldn't have to come out of the general fund, but we would have some assurance that we were getting it from someplace. And then another thought related is partnering with an educational institution or institution. So if we partnered with the public school districts, if we partnered with Clark College, is that something that we could get funding from? You know, they have more funding than we have, so is that a place we could draw funding from? And then the other possibility there is what's described as new management. And new management is, I mentioned that a couple of these around the country are operated by nonprofits. So could we find a nonprofit willing to operate this and also pay for it? Because if the organization operates it, the county still has to pay for it. That doesn't solve that problem of $170,000. So again, all of those strategies are listed on both sides of the sheet there. And what we'd like to do in kind of a discernment process here is take a few minutes and have you look through that list. And then we've got three boxes there for you to check. One of them is the box, we'd like to know what your top three priorities are. Probably going to take more than one of these funding sources anyway. So not just one. We know already cost recovery won't get us there, but it could be part of it. So take a look through those strategies and tell us what your top three priorities are, which other options you think are worth considering, and any option that you would rule out. So I'm just not willing to support that. I think that's a bad idea, and that's okay too. And again, we're not making decisions here, but we thought we would like to be able to take away your advice on this. So if you take a minute with it and fill out the worksheet, put your name on the top. So if we have questions about it, like in my case, Katie would say, I can't read your writing. So we can get back to you and ask questions about it. But this really is leading into the parts that Lindy is going to be talking about next. So where does all this go in the future? How are we going to make decisions about this as a group? And one of the important components of that is financial sustainability. So we're finally there. We're finally at a point where we can get your feedback on financial sustainability. So take a minute with a worksheet, if you will, and we'll
Just that very first thing on cost recovery, when you say compatible uses, that is so vague. And if we say, okay, yeah, compatible uses, that sounds good. And then down the road, they decide that that's putting up a little oil well. I mean, we don't know what compatible uses are.
Well, if you have,
like
if you,
the vagueness,
we got it. We got a comments thing in the back. And I think that's the kind of thing you could add a comment, but also just cross out compatible uses. And if you want to be clearer there about what you see as being compatible uses, you can be the author of what compatible uses is yourself.
The magic word transparency has a lot of things that even in the financial side of it, it's not formulated as a normal financial statement would be. It's just not set up that way. I can't believe the county accountants haven't got a proper financial statement. I love the Excel spreadsheet. Okay, I'll be quiet.
Good. This is super, again, the financial stuff you're seeing, this is super summary stuff. You know, it's a very high level summary. So the county certainly has financial statements, pages of them, spreadsheets, but this is, we're trying to make it accessible at a meeting here. Just that said, you had a question too.
I do just have a question or a comment. I don't know what it is. And when we look at the $170,000 that it costs to manage the farm, and those are the things that Zane does, or the irrigation and things like that. But I think we need to keep in mind and consider also the thousands and millions of dollars that come to those projects to make them function, that doesn't come from the county, that comes from LULAC grants, mm-hmm. might come from extension, might come from the food bank and their funding. It might come from donations of seedlings or product. So to have the output of what happens on the farm as farming isn't reliant on the $170,000. It is reliant on that to have the property, but we also have to realize that there is a lot of money that comes from the community to make those projects sustainable. So when we look at sustainability, I think we have to keep in mind that it's more than $170,000, and we're looking at community funding making that happen. So again, it's that cost recovery thing, or it's the leveraging the $170,000 that the county puts in with all of the other money that comes into those projects. So I think we have to keep that as part of that formula.
It's a great point. Others are investing in the site too, both in capital projects and facilities, but also in operating programs.
And that's something that we track on a yearly basis.
Yeah, and that's something we can take advantage of, capitalize on, but what we're trying to do here is focused at that $170,000 to see if we can balance the budget or
absolutely,
make an effort.
Absolutely, but that's that conception to the public that it's the $170,000 that makes mm-hmm. all of that happen. Right. And it isn't just that $170,000.
Much bigger, yeah.
I actually have a couple questions for Sandy. What's the current rate on the little plots?
I believe it's $75.
$75, yeah. And then my other question is, your point, and you mentioned it before, and we haven't spent enough time on it, but you know, it's not unlike, or it could be unlike, or a little like triple net rent. They're coming in, they're using a piece of property. Why couldn't part of the fee be we get a percentage of what you take in, whether you take it in through a grant or through people visiting or buying your product or whatever? I mean, that's certainly an option, and an easy to understand option. It's straightforward. So you come in, you make $80,000 on this, the county's going to get $800,000.
And it is set up that way, like for the plant sale. When the Master Gardener Foundation has their plant sale, a percentage of that goes back to the county. That's part of that revenue. And like the food bank, they pay a lease fee, they pay a rent fee, and that comes from their funding that goes back to the county to pay that revenue. So
that option is on the list, but not quite in the way that you said it. It is definitely the way it was said here, which was percentage of plant sales, et cetera, so on-site sales, but not the grant part. That's a new idea.
Yeah, that is the reason all of this broken down. We need to know how much and how often, because maybe what we really need to do is just really understand everybody that puts foot on the place and how much it costs to have them there. I also wonder why we're paying Washington State University $310,000 a year, and then we're providing IT and utilities. I mean, isn't that part of that whole thing?
But I think you also have to understand that whether they're housed at the farm or they're housed at the Casey Center, which is where they were previously, or if they were downtown, the county would pay that $310,000. That's the agreement.
$310,000. I'm complaining about.
So that's called the in-kind contribution, which is a requirement of an RCW. In-kind contribution to WSU pursuant to the RCW, which allows us, Clark County, to have WSU have those programs here. And so that is a requirement for the county to have WSU provide all those other services here. And it's to be transparent, we try to show all the numbers, but those numbers are not things that we're having any direction on or policy reference to. But duly noted that you have a question about that.
It would still be really good to know. I don't know how we would do it, whether you take a calendar of all the events and how we would do it. I recognize it's a pain in the neck kind of a project, but we can only understand what's put in front of us in the manner it's put in front of us. That isn't totally transparent to me, and I've worked in accounting for the better part of my life. And I think it should be clearer, and I think it should be spelled out. Because if I can understand it, then I can sell it to the community. If I can't understand it, I can't sell it.
Yeah, the WSU stuff, I don't make sure you're not confused on it. We're not going to try to solve the problem by just passing the bill to WSU. You know, WSU has an arrangement with the county, like every other county in the state. And that isn't our problem to solve. Our problem to solve is try to figure out how we can take care of part of that $170,000 a year that's coming out of the county general fund. That's what our assignment is. Yeah.
I'm not totally sure how to kind of address this. There's two things. I mean, I also feel like we just kind of breezed over those tables of budgets, and I'd really love to be able to go back to those and ask some questions about them before we dig into the financial sustainability, like choosing options. The second part is, so I have requested some things from the leaders of this committee, just as far as having numbers in certain ways so that we could separate WSD versus county. Because I don't think it's our place to get involved in WSD agreement. That's separate. Yes, they happen to be housed at the Heritage Farm, but like Sandy said, those costs will be there.
I think we have enough time, if Rocky's willing, we have enough time to go back and look at the spreadsheet again, so you can ask questions about it if you'd like.
I don't expect that for, you know, a county building or something. But I think that piece of information is really important, because what I heard from Lindy in the email for this was we need to make up this $190,000 difference. What I just heard from you, Clark, was we need to balance this budget. And I don't know that, I mean, if those are the goals that we're supposed to be addressing, that's news. To me, at least, and I heard it from both of you, so now I'm sitting here going, is that our goal, to make this, to balance the budget of this 190 or 175,000? Because if that's our goal, I guess I would disagree with that goal, but I want to be clear that okay. That is our goal, if it is.
Can we go back to the spreadsheet and then have Rocky?
So this is Rocky. Our goal is not to have 100% cost recovery. I think our goal here is to identify, are there ways that we can do better programming, business practices on site to have a higher recovery? We have not set that number. And I don't know if the steering committee is even the right place to set a cost recovery. Usually that's a Parks Advisory Board or Advisory Board, or Council really is the one that adopts it. But if there's input on that, I think if the steering committee identifies as, hey, Rocky, I don't see you can get 30 cents back on this unless some big things happen. That's the kind of things we're trying to figure out is the truth testing and looking at these things. Are we going to sway the pendulum way too far a different way to get cost recovery versus where the surveys, the steering committee is wanting this to be in the future. And our master plan has told us what it needs to be. So we've established thorns in this rose garden that we can't get away from. That's not going to allow us to be 100% cost recovery. That's just my opinion. And I'm just a guy. You guys are going to have a different opinion. We did start to look into the different costs per acre. But it's like finding a flower you like. Or who's your favorite kid? There's so many parameters for property. So depending upon its development, even within our park system. So we have very undeveloped property that we go out to once or twice a year. We spray for weeds. We kind of just let it be. Versus this property where we have 4 FTE here. It's intensive use, restrooms, all kinds of costs that are much higher per acre.
I love that. Yeah. just, you know,
and yeah, and I know our in our PROS plan, we've done some research. That's where I'm trying to pull this up to kind of get to that cost per acre, which for me, it's what's the man hours required to do a job? And then how are we getting those man hours on? Which gets to what you're saying, Sandy, is that we may have a million hours at the farm. County's only contributing $170,000 or 2,080 hours out of that million hours. But sometimes that becomes still very important. It's good to know the whole thing, but if, you know, and so that's the issue there. And I think it varies by anywhere from less than $100 an acre for some of those low things to, I think we were at, and this is off the top of my head, so you know the number's wrong. It's a couple thousand dollars an acre. This is an anomaly here at this specific property for its cost per acre. But most of our regional parks or community parks, because they have bathrooms, higher level for mowing and things like that, was it $3,200 or $1,800? I think $3,200 is our average cost for park. Our other facilities, I don't have their numbers because of course they have a lot of trades. And so they've got electricians, plumbers, and those sort of costs that are at a higher cost per. So that's sort of our range there. And our range here, if I remember correctly, if we divided the 170, not considering anything else, into the 42 tillable acres, is it 4,000 or 5,000 an acre? What we're currently, is what our current cost is.
Why 42? Why not?
Because if you look at the map, we have development, we have green space, wetlands, we have forests, we have slope. So we've tried to, some of the slope areas don't allow traditional tillable. So even if we were able to lease it, it's going to be a different cost point just because of different crops and stuff and such. So in the back, that's kind of the back. The empty spot here on the back, that's where a lot of that is that steeper sloped. There's some of it that's not as steep. We've got the cemetery on site. So, and we've got up to 79 acres includes, is it 9 acres, 10 acres of the front admin sort of shop yard parking lot area. So of full 79 acres, we're looking at, it was just over 50% looked to be tillable. And so when we've tried to factor it from there, where's our revenue coming back from? That's where it is.
So if I can jump in on the acreage number, because I did the calculation. We ended up with 15% slope, so I did a previous slope analysis with our GIS system, 15% slope. I just assume that it's too steep to farm with the equipment we have. We're working with consulars. They have an agriculture specialist to confirm those numbers. And so that 42 acre number might go up or down depending on where the slope threshold is before we have to start specialized ag equipment for row crops, which is currently what we're seeing out there. It's also factored in the wetlands, like Rocky mentioned. So there's 4 acres of the site that are going to be the water project. Anything north of Cooper Creek wasn't in the total acre calculation because of the master plan, so being developed something else. And so that number is gonna sort of vacillate sort of above and below 42 acres until we tie it down a little bit more clearly. And that's to try and get to that cost per acre calculation, current cost per acre, and then what we would have to charge if we charge that. And then the only other thing that's excluded in that calculation is some corridors for access. You know, we have to provide access because of the sizes of the current parcel. We have roads, lanes. So at some point, we'll have a little bit better sense of that.
So the intent of my question, like I can totally get the tilling and the slope and all that. That makes sense. The intent of my question was the average low, middle, high cost for the county of maintaining, handling, doing the things that you do on the land that you own that aren't like an office building. And so I think I totally understand that you couldn't make
make money off of those acres, but for the purposes of, you know, cost per acre of just managing the property, I don't think that applies, at least for what I'm asking for. I totally get that it applies to the property as a whole. Was acreage taken out of other lands in this calculation to do the comparison?
You mean, were we comparing it to other park properties?
With tillable, like, it's not an apple to apple.
Right, no, it's apple to grapefruit, and that makes part. But in page 58, figure 42 of the adopted in April 2022 PROS plan, located on the website, sorry, it's not up there, the average in 2019 for our park system is $2,079 an acre. So that was our average.
Say again,
$2,079.
But that, it's, this is David, I keep chiming in from sort of the back of the room. That's not general fund money. That's why I keep going back to change the color of the money.
So 65% of our park funds for our within the Greater Clark Park District. So there's a lower number of park acreage within the GCPD, but it's 65% of our maintenance budget. So our big parks are only 35%. So if we were looking at regional parks, our cost per acre would probably be below that 2,079. And our urban parks have a higher cost per acre. And it's just a different use level, different funding models as well in regards to how we operate. Much like the farm is a little different as well.
And are all county properties that aren't administrative owned by parks?
No. So Clean Water owns a few thousand acres that are mainly stormwater retention or other sort of clean water facilities. Public Works has other properties that are owned for a variety of reasons. They could have been acquired in the past for a road project or some other purpose. We have all kinds of, what's the nice word, dumps. We have a bunch of dumps that we own as well that we have to hang on to. Those cost per acre, I don't even want to think about. And those responsibilities. The Sheriff's Office, I think, has some property outside of just the usual thing. And I'm sure I'm missing some other departments out there. But Parks is probably the, if not the largest acreage owner, close to it. When you factor in our lands program, which is Conservation Future Properties, that brings us up to about 12,000 acres. And I don't know the total amount of acreage that the county owns, but we've got to be up there pretty high. And so we're nationally, if you look at how we're operating our park system to other park systems similar to ours, we're down in the basement in regards to FTE per acre per thousand, whatever the measurement is. We have a lot more property than a lot of other jurisdictions our size, but we have not as many people. Sometimes other recreations have recreation district staff, like the city of Portland. They have staff that are putting on programs that do some of the cool things that could be done at the farm. We don't have that in our park district currently. We don't have recreation staff. So that is, that's, I don't know, I think a third of staff, potentially, when you look at all the different programs in recreation in total. I know we're not talking about farms, but I apologize, is sort of that staff. And I know, like, across the river at the city of Lake Oswego, Lesher Farm, they have two people that are programming people to do programming there. They do all kinds of camps, all kinds of things. And they model their cost recovery based off of those two staff, not the operation costs, and trying to get to a cost recovery there. And they don't meet that level. But they have city fund, general fund that help pay for that. And so they look at that bigger benefit, which, again, things we're trying to look at with community access and highlight those. More questions on dollars?
Lucky, this is Matt Holland. I think, just for point of clarification, this just popped into my head, but I think a lot of the confusion with the word parks in regards to even with your question, our department's name is Parks and Lands. We cover open space. We always just say parks for short, but really, this is usable land, and that's why it falls under our purview. It's not necessarily, it doesn't mean a swing set in the middle of your farm plot. It's how do we utilize, maximize the use of the land that's available to us. And that's really what we're looking at. We talk about this, you know, financial sustainability, some of the cost per acre. There's examples, we didn't, there's one on there that wasn't named as an example that in Hillsborough that it's a great example. It's owned by the city of Hillsborough. It's managed by Swallowtail Waldorf School. In theory, it pulls $24,000 a year in profit, but that doesn't take into account any of the staff time that's put into it. So there's, but they consider it sustainable because of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the goal, I think, of what we're trying to get to from the staff hours. And what that means, $170,000. It's not that we're trying to make money. It's and then not even trying to become even. It's more
it's of a, like it's a swear word, man.
No, but it's but there's a lot of confusion, especially as I look at back at the questions and the comments from the last meeting. There seemed to be a lot of confusion as to what we really mean by that.
Yeah.
And what it means to have parks in charge of it. It's really it's parks and lands. It's just property. And that's really why it falls under us. I mean, it's either us or the roads guys. So, well,
roads do a great job, and my suspension is in good shape.
Roads people, I love them all.
No, and I think you know, and I think Christine was talking about is what is this and what is this not? You know, and I think maybe what we're trying to knock on is that this effort isn't a 100% dollar for dollar model that we're trying to look at. We're just trying to look at what's feasible. And it's because part of sustainability to me is can we keep doing it? You know, can we operate 100 events a year and here on the site and do everything else to generate the revenue? Today, I'd have to say no.
We're going to run out of time here. If you could take just a few minutes, make some notes on your worksheet, and then we're going to move on to the next agenda item.
Just to be clear about the sheet that we're filling out.
Yeah.
So the when you say top three top priorities, so we're only putting it in three times.
Three times, yeah.
Yeah.
Either one of your you could put one, two, three, or you could, okay. Or you could just check that box.
And then the others we could check.
What exactly? Yeah. And then there's a comment section at the bottom. You can either make suggestions about strategies that aren't listed here. We've heard a couple already. Or you can write more general comments.
If you just leave them in your when you go, I'll collect them at the end in case you want to add any notes for the conversations. Are you confident in your answers? Maybe whether they're writing. What's the game show? Are they locking in?
That's a good
one.
Yeah.
But you said three Priority. So does that mean we have to check all the boxes?
Just for the, in the first column, just check three that you would are your favorites of all of these. If there are three, you could only check one, you could, but don't check more than three.
Okay.
And you don't have to number them. You could number them if you have one, it's your top favorite, number two, that's your second, three. You can do it that way, you could just check the box. All the rest of them, the other two columns, you know, again, it depends if you think that's worthy of consideration, check that box, even though it might not be your favorite. That, and then the third column, ones that you think, I would never do that. I don't support that. You know, I would rule that out. If I were the county, I would rule that out. And then don't forget to put your names at the top so we can ask you to clarify something if we're confused.
The Florida share of the site operating costs and parks funding requires a portion of the site to be designated as a Park County MPD park. What are the implications of that?
So the implications would be that it would be, thank you. So like the Northeast Corner, where there's going to be a big parking lot in that block, considering there's going to be another trail, and then in the plan, there's a trail that brings in the park. So if those were realized and developed, those could bring in park levy or park history fund, so a different funding stream that would offset things hours. And so the time that he was doing a lot of that mowing, actually a fair amount of his cost is out there mowing stuff, it isn't on my right now. Those costs could be able to be distributed to that.
And what is the, why hasn't it been designated that yet?
Tough question. I don't know.
Do you accept
that?
Okay.
And some people who voice concern, as you've heard, I'm assuming historically about this park farm. Somehow parks are four-letter word. Is it five?
Or park depends on if it's plural or singular. Just to go on, this is what's been bothering me about this whole parks farm thing. Does designating this as a park change its use, change what you can do on it? I mean, I know it creates another funding stream that you just explained, but does it change what we can do with it?
Not really. It's pretty much the same. I think the difference is we have a park classification right now called a community park. So we have to make sure that those sort of attributes are on site to be honest and not just doing it at cost. So that's where, again, the trail and that parking lot that's already been part of the master plan would essentially allow it to continue to be like Lusher Farms or some of these other examples where its primary focus is still what it is today, an educational facility, food systems, research, et cetera. It's taking in those other uses and trying to figure out how we can attract people to the right.
So a park has to have certain attributes that currently are not on Heritage Farm.
A community
park or I mean, okay, what are the definitions of a park are there?
So in the Greater Clark Park District, there's essentially three. So it's a natural area, it's a neighborhood park, or it's a community park. And those are sort of our three. That is not a Greater Clark Park District. That's a general fund classification, which you will find I have like nine different funding streams that I have to blend through. You know, Christine has the same spreadsheet to figure out how many colors are, you know, my birthday or my green and my attorney time.
I apologize for my ignorance on that, but I'm just trying to figure out why there's such a heartache between designating it as a farm and designating it as a park.
So I think I can't speak for others, but what I feel I'm hearing is that there's a concern that somehow it's an all or none spectrum. So it's all farm or it's all park, meaning it looks like this.
Yeah.
And so I think that maybe that's a concern that people have in regards to what the park element is. I wasn't here in the previous two iterations where the path was drawn and some of those recreational elements and the tripping elements were drawn in and put. You know, I've heard comments through this process, well, I don't think it's ever going to happen, you know, and laying out reasons why it should never be implemented, but they were reviewed and vetted by the public twice now. And that is our land use document or policy moving forward. So the way our master plan is set up, I think it meets the requirements to call it a community park or portions of it as a community park. And I'm just saying portions of it to help insulate the farm uses to where people feel like it's all going to become soccer fields. You know, I don't think soccer fields or any of those fields uses would be, hey, we have to go through the master plan. We get feedback saying, hello, Rocky. So, I mean, the people have a lot of sway. That's why we're here trying to make sure we're, you know, put your water the right way and get it to go on. And through this process, we know there's still going to be a lot of divergent of opinions, and hopefully we can either equally be okay with an outcome by all parties or a uniform moment, which is we are amongst.
This is it.
Generates.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pick these up.
We're addressing concerns. We need to know what the concerns are.
I think that's a reference to a map, like a key. So, a natural area is. A natural area is typically a spot that's focused on conservation and habitat. So it's really a passive recreation, recreation. So
it would be unused.
Seriously, I mean, I'm serious.
But the farming, we do have our conservation features as farming funds.
Okay, we need to move on.
That's why we need to reach out, because that's something we can definitely talk about. Is that good example would be.
So we need to start putting pieces together.
And that's where we have to create clarity because say for example, you say natural areas, somebody might think, well, I love Hamilton Mountain, that's a designated state natural areas. That means that's what they're going to do, and it's not what it's.
Okay, I have another section to get through, and then we'll have another 15 minutes to have another committee discussion. So if we could get through this part, and then you guys can talk amongst yourselves or continue to ask questions, whatever your best use of time is. So thank you, Matthew. Okay, so I get the awesome job of telling you how we're going to take all of these different conversation points, the cost recovery ideas, different strategies, and put them in a plan that you guys can make a recommendation for, and we can put before council. So I've begun in the last, since our last meeting, kind of laying out the draft plan. I've been mostly focusing on the structure of the document and inputting some core information like the purpose of the plan, some site history information and why it's important, an important property, and then recapping the process that we're going to go through. Those are pretty basic parts of the plan. And now the next step is going to be to determine the best strategy and the goals that will meet the goals established by the council. And the most basic project management tool for making a decision is to create an alternative analysis. It's basically a table, kind of like the one that you see here, where we can have a framework that'll let you look at the strategies and also figure out how those can align with those project goals that are the best and create something that's the best benefit to the community.
So there's generally about four steps to an alternative analysis, and I don't mean to be, well, I'm going to take you through the steps of something that might be fairly easy to understand, but I'm going to kind of tell you how they're going to work specific to this project. So the first step is to identify and define the alternative strategies or combination of strategy elements. So just like we've been talking about, to implement the master plan, we know the property probably isn't going to be a single use. It's going to be a combination of uses, like WSU's presence on the site, trails, interpretive elements, educational opportunities, incubator farming, those kind of things. And then there's multiple ways of combining those uses and how they can be implemented for cost recovery, like Clark has been discussing, like user fees, leases, nonprofit management, et cetera. So figuring out what those strategies are, which Clark's been working with you on to determine what they are, will be the first step. And that's going to help fill out the green section across the top. We'll have, I think, at least a minimum of three, if not more, if it makes sense, combinations of those strategies and identification of those general cost recovery ideas. How we're going to make that happen. The next step is going to be defining the criteria for strategy evaluation. So, and you can see in the orange column down, we have to define how you're going to judge and grade each alternative equitably. So, because you need to compare each of the strategy against the same criteria. We can't just sit around and think about, oh, what feels the best to us? Well, we need to be able to agree what we're judging it against, and how we determine what those, how you can grade that so you can come out with actually determining what the best, a logical, transparent way of how we got to figuring out what that best strategy is. So we need to identify the criteria and define what they mean to the group. We also need to identify if any of those criteria should be weighted more highly than others. Maybe there's one on here, and they'll be larger on the next screen, but there's one about community wellness, and then there's fiscal or sound fiscal policy. Well, maybe one of those means more to the committee than the other, and so we need to figure out how to weight one over the other so that it all figures in to the way that makes sense for you guys. And before we get to the next step, so part of this step number two, is that we're going to take this framework, this kind of table that we create, we're going to put it in the draft plan, and then we're going to take that draft plan to the next public meeting, open house if you were. We're going to probably come back to this exact room. We'll share the plan ahead of time. We'll allow people to come in and discuss what's in there, and do they agree? Are these the right strategies we should be looking at? Is this the criteria we should be looking at, so that they can provide feedback to you before you actually get to the hard work of filling in the boxes? What should be rated for each one of those? After the public meeting, we're also going to go to the Park Advisory Board and to Council and just kind of check in, let them know where we're at in the process, share the work that's here that we've done so far, make sure that we're not going off in the wrong direction as they see, before we get to the part of finalizing the plan and grading this alternative analysis. So that last step is to report the results, step number four. And so that would be you guys coming together, or not coming together, you guys grading the report, filling it out, the table in your rankings, and then we'll compile all of the information to figure out what is the best strategy. We'll come back and meet together as a group again and discuss that, make sure that you're comfortable with the recommendations before we then proceed forward with another final informative public meeting where we present that final plan and then on to the council for approval. So some timelines for that. Today, we've kind of started discussing these different strategies. We've already kind of discussed them in the past a little bit and started discussing this evaluation criteria. I don't think that today is the day to figure out what all these things are. There's not enough time, and there's still a lot of discussion to be had. So we'd like for you after this meeting to go out and meet with the folks that you represent, because you're not just here, giving us your specific opinion. You represent groups of the community, you represent specific organizations, and you were chosen for a reason to be here. We want to make sure that you have the time to check in with those folks and make sure you're bringing their thoughts and opinions forward. So I know it's a short timeline to come back on the 13th, but I sent the meeting invite out. And I hope that you'll have, that'll give you the 2 weeks to check in with those folks and come back and have a more robust discussion about that. And then the fun work begins for me, where I need to finish drafting this plan, bringing your framework together for the alternative analysis and getting everything ready to go. Giving myself a little bit over a month to do that. We would then share that with you, and you would get to have look at it on your own. You can provide comments to me individually, or if you want to share them collectively, we can do that as well. We'll bring it forward, as I said, in step number four here, review it at a public meeting again here. That's going to happen in April or May, hopefully sooner rather than later, but I think we're looking at May for that public meeting. And then check in with council. I'm sorry. And then we would be checking in with the council so that we can get the final grading done and have you guys complete your work for your recommendations by July. And then we'll have through the fall to go through back through our advisory board and council for final approval. But that's not too much information. Okay, so these are some priorities that you guys had identified back when you first started. I think it was at the second meeting in November that you had together. Clark had taken you on through a visioning exercise of what you'd like to see at the site. So these were some strategies, I think, that you brought up at that point, maintaining the agricultural heritage of the site, which also kind of supports, I think, what Bill was saying earlier, like really thinking about historically what the site's been used for and making sure that we're focused on maintaining that in what happens in the future. Using the site to support the future of urban farming. We had a lot of input on involving youth in the survey, so that's a good thing. You guys are in line with the public there. And then increasing public awareness and access to the site through community events, classes, tours, and controlled trail areas, which I think also appeared pretty heavily in the survey and also the community leader interviews. So I alluded to some criteria, that orange column, and what should those criteria be that you're judging these strategies against? If you look through, might remember from your first homework assignment, the 2020 master plan update, it actually has, I think there's eight of them here, guiding principles for that master plan update. And we, I think at a minimum, need to make sure that those are included as part of the criteria that you're judging these strategies against. So the first one is to celebrate our county's agricultural heritage, maintain WSU's presence on the site through programs, research, and office facilities, showcase and promote sustainable agriculture and building practices, support agricultural research that supports sustainable farming practices, enhance community wellness and inspire lifelong learning, promote community volunteerism, and integrate a variety of activities and resources that provide community access, and then finally reflect sound fiscal policy in decision-making matters, which I think is what we've been focused on quite a bit here. You might find that this is not an exhaustive list. Maybe there's a couple of things that you think are missing. You don't have to know what those are today. You can talk about it with the folks that you represent. Maybe there's something that you think should be brought forward, but I think we kind of think these are the minimum and maybe the side work for what needs to be included in that alternative analysis. So in just a minute here, we're going to give you some time to kind of talk about these if you're ready to do so. But there's just not going to be enough time to nail them all down today. So be prepared when you come back on the 13th, please, to talk about them in more detail. And also, don't just think about these and the definitions of what these mean to you, but the weighting of them. Maybe there is something, like I said, that might be a little bit more important to you. All right. So again, more homework. I'm always the one that hands out homework, I guess. But so
please consider the strategies that you've already started looking at that Clark kind of went through with you. And then the evaluation criteria that I've gone through from the master plan. Touch base with your community group or the organization you're representing, and then come prepared to propose, support, and oppose strategies. Maybe there's things that you don't think don't make sense. Maybe there's things that you're really, you know, gung-ho about, and bring your voice to the next meeting and have that discussion with each other.
Are we going to get this?
So I really apologize. I think I mentioned before, I was unable to print the slide deck. I normally would have given that to you already. But I will, before I leave the meeting, I'll email it to all of you. And if you want to print out a copy, I can figure out how to get it for you. So come next time on the 13th. I hope that you're all able to join. If it's too short, you can't get here because this is a short turnaround, but yet you can, you know, sign on from abroad. Feel free to join the meeting, but we really think it's important to be here, to be present.
Do you have the other dates? I saw the May, June, July thing.
Oh, yeah. So I don't have any dates that are set in stone yet because I'm nervous about being able to get my part done. So I'm not ready to commit to those. But I just wanted to give you kind of an outline of, you know, what to expect. And as soon as I know any dates, I would definitely share them with you, even if we haven't had a meeting yet.
I don't want to rush it.
I want to do a good job.
Good question.
I just have a question about the public comment on the strategies, and once we put those out there and we kind of come up with something and you have the public comment, is there going to be some time to discuss anything that came up at those meetings that we hadn't thought about that might need to be added or changed or whatever?
Sorry, Sandy, can you say it one more time?
You can. So we're going to come up with the strategies and the goals and everything, and then they're going to be presented at a public meeting to kind of get their input, as well as to the council and the Parks Board. And so if there's comments or suggestions of things that we hadn't thought about, will we have a chance to revisit those kinds of things and see if the strategies and goals need to be changed or tweaked a little bit before the final draft is put out there?
Yeah, so we will have, we'll bring all of the public comments that we receive around that public meeting. We'll be able to share with you if you're not, you know, attending or watching the Park Advisory Board meeting or the council meeting. We'll in some way summarize what was discussed there and provide that to you. We'll have that meeting where we just get together to discuss it before it's actually finally put forward. We thought it would be best to have, because it would be, we committed to 4 additional meetings back a couple of months ago. We thought it would make more sense to have that meeting right before the final plan is issued, just because we thought it would be a responsible thing to do.
Yeah, I just think it's responsible that if the public comes up with, or the council comes up with something that's a really cool strategy that we need to have in there, or a criteria, that we need to have some time to think about that and where do we insert that, or do we take something out, or does it become a different priority? Because if we're asking for those comments, then we need to take them to heart if there's something in there that's really creative or exciting.
Yeah, you'll have a chance. One thing I apologize, I forgot to include in here. I compiled the public comments that we received at the public meeting, and then also that we've received through email, and I had intended for them to be in this packet, and they're not. So I'll make sure that you receive those as well today, along with the slide deck.
Those are going to be on the website as well, alternatively, for that was Rocky.
Okay, so this is your community discussion. Katie, do you want to
share
our committee?
So I know we had some lingering questions that I don't know if everyone got their questions from before answered.
Table, can't say that word.
You want the criteria, or you would like to?
Which is most compelling to the group? Is there did something catch your eye on the table, or?
Yeah, sorry.
Maybe we'll go with next. This the alternative analysis criteria.
So where on the table are these? I haven't done
one. So these would be in the orange.
Okay.
that were on the left, the rows. And then your strategy, it doesn't even matter what they say right now. The green across the top, they're just, you know, it's kind of placeholders for what you guys come up with. I would assume that strategy number one would be same with no change. And then on from there with wonderful ideas.
In the next session on February 13th, where we're identifying criteria, and then the March meetings where we'll look at alternatives.
So you would be identifying both at the next meeting. That's okay. What we're going to talk about, strategies and the criteria to grade them against.
And is it like a number? Is it a
yeah.
Yes, no?
We'll probably do a 5-point rubric. I strongly disagree. I strongly agree. I don't care.
We're going to use the vision, or not vision, the exercise that you went through today, where you filled out the paper that were handed out, and then that will help inform and guide the conversation at the next meeting to kind of help compile those into strategies.
What are you looking to do? Give this the top three? I mean, if you're gonna have this criterion, what I hear you saying is that we're gonna have 5 points, let's say I just made up 5 points for each criterion that we're assessing the alternatives with. And so at the bottom there's 10 criterion. I know there's not, but just for math it makes it easy for me. So it's out of 50 points, and then you score all of them out of the 50 points, and then we combine that all together and then talk that between everyone's criterion. Of course, the scoring itself is not going to occur until May, June, after we have the public meeting, so that then we get all that feedback, confirm that the alternatives we've spec'd are proper, and then we would do the scoring. Right now, we're just trying to figure out what that criteria is that we would be using to score, and then those alternatives that will be getting assessed and mind mapping. These are
those are some of them. Right. And so you guys are gonna tell us what you think they should look like, how they should be combined together if they're not all just one, and how you think we would best do some cost recovery and I guess implement those. And then the criteria on the side, most likely you're going to start with the 8 that are from the master plan. And all you need to do is tell me whether or not you want more of them, or if you want to, if you have a specific thing in mind that maybe doesn't ring true when you read, what does enhance community wellness and inspire lifelong learning, maybe that needs to be further defined in your mind. Then we can do that and make sure that's represented in the plan. And then the weighting aspect would be, if you could be thinking about if any of these 8 or any of the ones that you are going to bring forward might be more important to you.
So you're saying some might be worth 10 points, yeah. And some might be worth 1 point.
Christine, did you have a question? Yeah, I guess I'm still, so these criteria here, we're judging of whether or not to keep them.
No, I think they need to stay.
Okay, so they're staying, and then we're saying, is there anything else? And then how does it compare with these recommendations of what to do?
So let's say strategy number one is same, that there's no changes and we keep operating from taking the money from the general fund to fund farm operations. So then when it comes time, we've gone through the public meeting, we've gone to council for check-in and the park advisory board, and you've got all this information that people have provided you on their opinions on strategies and criteria. You would be putting numbers in boxes to kind of to score them against those criteria. So how does same meet the criteria of celebrating Clark County's agricultural heritage?
It's a rubric.
Yes. And how does it maintain, WSU's presence? Does it do all of these different things?
So criteria is this way. Alternatives are this way.
Yes.
So I get how we're coming up with the criteria. The alternatives, can you just re-describe that process?
So you're coming up with different, I think they've already been collected.
So this worksheet?
Yes, you're coming up with your top three. We're going to have,
not specifics, but categories.
Right, and if there's anything else that you wanted to add to that, you were able to add that, and we could still do that at the next meeting as well, if there's something that you come up with. And we're going to figure out how you want to combine those together into defined strategies that can be added to that top row.
So.
That was so not clear.
So I think what she's going to do.
Not at all.
All right.
Not clear at all.
Let's see if I heard her right, and I confuse it even more. So from the feedback we got on this form today in regards to the values of the farm, things we need to have at the farm, our top priorities, staff are going to pull those together and rank them out and show that. And then from those things, so like lease on programmed areas, let's say that was one. So one of those alternatives, we would have that in the things, like the menu of the things the farm's going to do, and have that ranked at the highest level and rank it down. And then we'll have another one that's a little different in regards to, you know, so same, turn it all into a conservation area park. Third one is Port of Rocky manages the whole thing. And so those are the big things. And then we would list out what those elements underneath that would be based off of these priorities. And so the idea is that these are going to help inform those different alternatives in a different way. So when we come back, we'll have some things on the board that say, here's the three alternatives we heard from this. Again, did we get it right? Are we missing stuff? Is there a fourth or a fifth one that we need to put in there? And then go back and look at, okay, how are we going to evaluate those alternatives? Here's the criterion. Do we need a couple? Do we need two more? Or do we need to vet it out like compatible uses? We need to really define that thing out more so. You know, Rocky says it's okay, it's compatible versus pursuant to RCW, blah, blah, blah. Does that clearer? Or am I just muddying the turbidity?
So I guess, so that to me feels like what we just filled out is more of a financial sustainability. That feels like, that okay. Felt like that to me.
Okay.
So it ends right here. So that's the financial, that's like how we pay for this, right? Or how we pay for maintaining or keeping a sustainable farm.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so
and I think seems like that's one of our goals, and I think now it's, are we doing it through a BMW versus a Toyota versus a Hyundai in regards to those alternative ways of cost recovery, implementing the master planning, and improving public access?
So wouldn't the four items from the 2020 planning be on the top line also? Involve youth, increase public awareness and access. Wouldn't that be on the top?
It's all
that
integrated.
That would be a criterion. Improving public access. And those are all kind of already in here. They were a part of the.
Yeah, if you go, for me, I like the other one that has, you can't read it, just because it organizes my mind in regards to what is. This is how I'm assessing it. And then somehow from this information, the other information, we're going to come up with alternatives. We call them strategies here to, so, you know, is it 75% incubator farm, 35% WSU? That doesn't match, math doesn't work. But that's the problem, see? Now we have 110% issue. Where are we going to find the other 10%? Or is it 50% park, 25% WSU, 6% flowers, 29% hobby farming, and then horses. We can't forget the horses. We got 6% for horses.
And then you would compare it using this criteria.
And I think what we're trying to do is not get specific to who the partners would be in the exact programming, but sort of those gestalts of, I keep going back to that German word today, in regards to leasing land, looking at alternative funding streams, parks, other things, these things in regards to how to weigh that out. It's going to be fun and exciting once we see it on paper. If you're like me, I need a couple markers and maybe some coffee. And
so
we'll lock the door.
Between now and then, be thinking of the strategies, the alternative, the things that you want to see on the farm, whether they're focus on agricultural education, WSU's presence, things like that that you would list, and how, if you think that there are cost recovery strategies you think that would be important to incorporate in those, we're going to have an exercise where we work together to build those, not together, you are going to have an exercise where you build those
build those and kind of put them together. And then we're going to grade them against the criteria, score them against the criteria. So, and some of the terminology all overlaps, which makes it more fun to discuss. But I think it's going to be, when we get to the next meeting, it'll be more evident.
This meeting was a lot of us sharing. Most uncomfortable process ever.
The goal of the next meeting too is for it to be a lot more collaborative amongst you all. This meeting was a lot of information sharing. We really wanted to invest time in hearing and allowing you guys to work together. So we're coming up on the end of the meeting. I know we haven't clarified all the questions, but we're hoping that you all will come back on February 13th. And we will work together to further clarify those questions and work on the criteria together. I want to ask you if you still have your financial worksheet to please leave that here so we can collect that, so we can score and figure out what the priorities were amongst the group. That would be really helpful. And if there isn't anything else, I want to thank you all again for taking the time out of your day to come and participate. Participation is really important, and we are looking forward to hearing more from you in February. We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone online.